Talking History with Patrick Gagan and Lindsay Erna-Byrne on News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to Talking History. Well, later in the show, we will be looking at the history of tea. And as a tea addict myself, I'm going to find that particularly interesting, particularly as there's new recent research printed in the British Medical Journal about tea causing throat cancer, which causes me serious concerns. So we'll ask them if they know anything about that. Earlier on today, I had the pleasure of talking to Padraig Conway, director of the International Centre for Newman Studies at UCD, about a conference that they'll be running there tomorrow on Carl Rahner. I hope I've got that pronunciation correct there, Padraig. You can text in and give out to me at a later date if not. I began by asking Padraig about the life of Carl Rahner and what would be happening at the conference tomorrow.
That's right, Lindsay. Yeah, we have a one-day conference tomorrow on Carl Rahner, theologian for the 21st century. Carl Rahner died on the 30th of March, 1984. So I'm just very happy that events have conspired so that we could have the conference on the actual 25th anniversary of his death.
And so who was he, Padraig?
Carl Rahner is probably the most significant Roman Catholic theologian of the 20th century, Lindsay. He was born March 1904. And as I mentioned, died on March the 30th, 1984. There's a rather cruel suggestion that after his death, it was the stresses and strains of his 80th birthday celebrations like that had put him over the edge.
So he was still very lively at 80 then?
He was still very lively at 80, but he led a very regular lifestyle. And as would befit a member of the Society of Jesus, and there was a suggestion that these celebrations were all just a bit too much for a man of his advanced years. But I suppose obviously his real significance lies in his contribution to theology in the 20th century, Catholic theology particularly. And I suppose it's a mark sometimes of the greatness of somebody that they change people's way of thinking so much that we just end up thinking that, well, what we think now was always the case. And the best example of that is probably the attitude of Christianity to world religions. It's not a criticism of the missionary movement in the 20th century to say that if you look through the missionary magazines of the 30s, 40s and 50s into the 60s indeed, when the recruitment of missionary personnel was at its peak, you had a very clear picture of the distinction between the Catholic world and the world to which the missionaries were bound, and there was no doubt that they were doing a very important mission to bring a truth, a saving truth, to these people. Now, the missionary movement still exists today, but with a very different type of legitimacy, if you want to use that word. And I think what Rahner did was he just changed the whole way of thinking to see the presence of God already in these religions, already in fact in all of human nature. In one of his more technical writings, he described the very concept of human nature as a remainder concept. Such was the strength of his conviction that the presence of God is always already present among all the peoples of the world.
This sounds like a sort of theology that would have gone down well with other religions other than Catholicism, because it sounds like it almost has a universal quality to it.
Oh, it has a universal quality to it. I mean, I brought with me today, and I know this might sound a bit like tap dancing on the radio, but I mean, I was in Assisi in January, and there's a picture of a famous event that took place in October 1986 when John Paul II prayed with the Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of the Orthodox Church, the Dalai Lama, and various other religious leaders. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that this event couldn't have happened without, you know, the theological groundwork, if you want to put it like that, of Carl Rahner. I mean, he was a huge inspiration for the ecumenical movement, which I think is behind the question that you're asking there. And I suppose in one of his more provocative writings, again, he said that there were two really significant events in the history of Christianity. One was the Council of Jerusalem, which is written about in the Acts of the Apostles, when they have the debate about whether the Gentile converts to Christianity have to be circumcised. In other words, whether they have to go through the Jewish rites. And obviously, as we know, and again take for granted now as just normal, we don't, as a result. And he said the other one was the Second Vatican Council. As you said, the Second Vatican Council was the first truly world council in Christianity, that all of the other councils, without taking away from their precise and local significance, but that they had been councils of a Western church, and that this, the Vatican Council, was, which itself, of course, as you know, is a hugely contested event now among historians as to its precise significance, but that this was the first truly global council, and that the Christianity of the 21st century was going to be a world Christianity.
Coming from this council.
Coming from, as he would have seen, the true spirit of Vatican.
And what was his impact on that, on Vatican?
Oh, he's a huge figure in Vatican II. He's a huge figure in Vatican II, Lindsay. He was appointed by Pope John the 23rd, who called the council. Actually, the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of his calling the council was celebrated only a few weeks back in early 1959. He first announced it, and I suppose in keeping with the patterns of a church that thinks in terms of centuries, it was November 1962 before they kicked it off. In the interim period, Rahner had come under a cloud, you might say. He'd come under a cloud and was got notice that he was in a status called pre-censorship, which meant he had to go through an approval process before he wrote or published
this?
Anything.
I presume he'd written something that
It was
thrill hierarchy.
Yeah, you could put it that way. His work and along with some French contemporaries in what was a movement that was known as La Nouvelle Théologie, they came under a cloud of suspicion as being too accommodating to the modern world. Okay. I suppose is the simplest way of putting it.
So possibly not ecumenical, possibly too secular.
Possibly too secular, and possibly, you know, horror of horrors, relativist or syncretist, to use another technical term, at risk of turning Christianity into a kind of a mélange of whatever you're having yourself.
So, and just not orthodox.
These are the sort of things that critics would have been muttering at the time. But then, as it were, with one bound, our hero was free because the council was called. And then in 1962, John the 23rd, or under the eye of John the 23rd, Rahner was appointed one of the perity or expert advisors to the council. He was called in another text as the Holy Ghost writer of the documents of Vatican II, and undoubtedly had a key input into some of the major documents on, you know, divine revelation, on the church, on relationship with other religions. His mark is to be detected in almost all of the documents of the council.
And so at tomorrow's conference, what aspects of his career will you be examining?
Well, what Rahner is quite out of fashion now, I suppose, is an important thing. Believe it or not, in spite of all of the foregoing, he's quite out of fashion now, because I suppose, if you like, what holds sway, we hear enough in the commercial context, and indeed many would say we hear too much in the university context about terms like comparative advantage and so on, but I think one of the reasons Rahner is out of fashion is that he's seen as not emphasizing enough the distinctness of Christianity. What is it that makes us different, distinct, and not like everybody else? And there's no doubt that Rahner's theology, taken as a whole, does tend to be on the abstract side of things. But our conference tomorrow then is Rahner, Karl Rahner, theologian for the 21st century? Declan Marmion, who edited the Cambridge Companion, is going to talk about Rahner's theological legacy. Fáinse Ryan from Mater Dei will talk about his relationship with Thomas Aquinas, and Jim Corkery from the Milton Institute, a fellow Jesuit, is going to talk about Rahner's relationship with Ratzinger and what promises to be an intriguing paper, looking back over the history of that relationship, which included co-authoring a book at one stage together. And the Austrian ambassador is coming along to introduce the final session, where Professor Linda Hogan from the Irish School of Ecumenics will respond to the paper members, those three and one I'm giving myself on Ranner and Newman as men of letters. I'll be talking particularly in that about Ranner's the controversial set of correspondence published after his death.
This was what was the phrase I came across?
Celibate love triangle, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was, he was involved with a widow, and there was another, there was a
third anonymous religious figure in the quasi triangle.
This
suppose.
Lasted 30 years. Well, it did,
yes, but at its most, I mean, the woman in question is Louisa Rinzer. Louisa Rinzer is quite a colourful character in German history. She's married four times, including to the composer Karl Orff, whom we all know from, you know, the Carmina Burana riff that goes up at rugby matches now when the team runs onto the pitch. And as one might say, her colour wasn't confined to the four marriages. She formed a relationship with Ranner at the Vatican Council and with another cleric, and quite controversially in the mid-90s, published the correspondence with...
It was about 4,000 letters, wasn't it?
There was a lot of letters, all right, yeah. It's published in a book called Grat Venderung, and it got a very mixed reception at the time. I mean, it was received with a measure of fury by the German establishment, who saw her as effectively manipulating and tarnishing Ranner's memory. Others were kind of amused that Ranner, who, as I said earlier, had led such an almost colourless life, you know, after his death, could have become embroiled in such a, you know,
kaleidoscope. But it wasn't a sexual relationship.
Oh, I think there's absolutely no doubt that it wasn't, apart from anything else. And I hope it won't offend any of your listeners if I say that. I mean, the intensity at which the language of the letters maintained itself would suggest a relationship that was never consummated, as opposed to one that descended into a rut.
I think that will leave our listeners with some very interesting thoughts indeed.
Well, the final thing I'll just be saying in my own thing is that I'm quite critical of Hans Küng, however, who resurrected this in the second volume of his memoirs recently published, and who kind of throws this up at Ranner for not backing Küng in his squabbles with the Vatican over infallibility. And I think it's a cheap shot on Kung's part to bring up the Louisa Rinzer thing, and I'll be saying that tomorrow.
And that was Porta Conway, Director of the International Centre for Newman Studies at UCD, talking to me about Karl Ranner and the conference on his life, which will be tomorrow at the International Centre for Newman Studies at UCD.